This is the True Voice Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Back in 2011, I started a social business agency called True Voice Media. In 2013, I launched this podcast because my audience told me that they wanted to learn more about how social media could help them grow their business, but they wanted it to be interesting and without all the standard social media hype and BS. Just someone who will give it to them straight with honest, simple strategies that they can use today. If you're a new listener and that sounds like what you want too, listen to this episode. And if you love it, subscribe to our show. We'd love to have you on board. So without further ado, let's get started. Hey everyone, I just want to take a moment out to thank one of the partners that we have that makes this show possible, WP Engine. You know, back in the days of dial-up, people would wait for websites to load, but attention spans are shorter than ever. Did you know that the average attention span has dropped to a mere 8 seconds? And for reference, the average attention span of a goldfish is only 9 seconds. So you only have a short period of time to hook people on your website, and if half that time is spent waiting for the page to load, you are sure to lose customers. Beyond that, what do you do when your website goes down? Who do you call? Well, today's best businesses are running websites that load quickly and have virtually no downtime. In the event something does go wrong, the best businesses are back up and running in no time. That's why the best businesses trust WP Engine for hosting. If you're running a WordPress site like nearly 20% of the entire web, you owe it to yourself to upgrade your hosting to WP Engine. It's fast, it's secure, and their support is amazing. We use WP Engine at True Voice Media, and over the next 18 months, we're planning to move every single one of our sites to WP Engine. That's how good it is. Right now, WP Engine is offering 2 months free when you prepay for the entire year. And when you get to the site, look along the top of the page for additional discounts and offers. Go to truevoicemedia.com/hosting to learn more about the best damn WordPress hosting on the web. This is episode 49 of the True Voice Media Podcast. And I am your host, Jeff Gibbard, and I am here with Manette Riordan. Did I say that right?
You did. Perfect.
Oh, thank God. I was practicing in my head as I was doing the intro, and I was really hoping that I nailed it. So I nailed it.
Totally nailed it. Yeah.
49 for 49. There I go. Okay. So here we are. It's a Friday. Life is good for both of us, and we've been connected through the magic of the internets.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting stuff. And you have a really interesting background. So there's a lot of people on this thing called the internet now. So I'm sure that there's at least one person, maybe two, that are listening who don't know who you are. So what I'd like for you to do is give us the $3 tour of you, who you are, what you do, where you come from, and where you got those fabulous glasses you're wearing. You can't see it if you're not watching.
Vera
Wang, very nice. Yeah, if you're just listening to the audio version, trust me on this. They're nice looking frames.
Thank you. I like color. So, which has everything to do with my story. So, $3 tour. It probably all started with getting a doctorate from Stanford University in Spanish. I'm a specialist in 19th and 20th century Latin American poetry, and I don't use it at all in my
life. Really?
I am, yes. And, you know, I believe life takes us on a journey. It brought me to California. I did my doctorate at Stanford. I met my husband while I was there. And to make the journey a little bit shorter, ended up teaching at a private high school for troubled teens after graduating from Stanford. Realized that my husband and I were spending 50% of our time apart from each other. Ended up, I know, not a great way to start a marriage or start a family. And so we ended up following his job to Texas. I'm a native Texan, very proud of that.
You don't sound like a native Texan.
I know. I grew up in San Antonio, Texas, studied languages, married a Canadian. I traveled a lot, just kind of went by the wayside somewhere along the line. I do say y'all, though. I love the word y'all.
And you have kids, right?
I have two kids.
So they have to be crazy confused. Canadian, Texas, California.
You know what? If you ask them, they're pretty happy to be Texas Canadians.
Excellent. I don't know how many Texans would say that they'd be happy to be Texas Canadian. Okay, I got you. Okay, so continue. Yeah. So you're now in Texas, followed your husband there.
Plano, I didn't go to school for all those years to stay home. I love my kids, but I was not a very good stay-at-home mom. So I started looking around going, what can I do? I had worked in retail, done a lot of babysitting, and been a school teacher. So I decided to start a magazine. Why not? Makes perfect sense, right? So I started a publishing company. I started Parenting Magazine, and I started publishing that quarterly in 2002. It quickly grew from a quarterly to a monthly magazine.
And this is offline magazine.
This was in print, correct?
And what year was this, just for reference?
2002.
Okay, cool. Got it.
So no website, internet really just starting. Everybody was using email, but it was, and I think my husband built us a website, but he did all the crazy programming. So, you know, I could never do anything to change it. He's a programmer by trade. And it kind of grew like wildfire. It was the right place, right time.
Wildflowers. That's actually, I'm going to start using that expression. It grew like wildflowers. It spread like wildflowers. That's even better than wildfire because it's nice and it's happy.
It is. And if you grew up in Texas, spring and the bluebonnets and the Indian paintbrush, they did come up really fast and they were gone almost just as fast. So same concept. And it grew like crazy, but it always felt like I was chasing it, not leading it as a business. And I started it because I wanted something to do, not because I had a really clear vision of where I was going. So a few years into that, started asking lots of questions, deciding what do we want to do next. Then 2008, 2009 hit. We lost 30% of our clients, our advertisers, were just out of business. The area of North Texas with the telecom corridor where we were living was hit really hard. And so the other 30 to 40% of our business that kept advertising was awesome, but that population kept shrinking. So if you remember, the economy's crashing, and at the same time, the internet's taking off. And everybody's saying, we want digital media, we want, and I saw, I think you started in 2007. So right about that whole same time, people are having the digital media conversation. So we actually stopped print at that point and converted the entire thing to a digital publication.
Was this a transition, or did you just say, you know what? Screw paper, we're going digital.
No, there was a transition. We added digital. We started offering digital marketing. We converted to a WordPress site. You know, we did all the things to try to stay ahead of that learning curve with digital marketing and digital media. And then in 2010, we just gave up the ghost on print and turned everything digital. We started with Issue right when they were brand new, just doing digital magazines. It was a brand new format. It was a lot of fun to create, really beautiful. I don't know that it ever had or will have quite that same impact when my daughter was about 5, walking into a dance school or a drama program to pick her up from class, and there's 10 moms all sitting there reading my print magazine. Right? It's a completely different impact. And the word of mouth plays out very differently in print. I'm still a big fan of print. Glad I gave it up. And then in 2012, we shut that business down. We sold it. It's still going. NorthTexasKids.com for any parents that are listening. And moved to Santa Barbara, California. I'm sitting here looking at the mountains right outside my window in the palm trees right now. And started a coaching business. Because what I learned after 11 years in the publishing industry is that small business owners were clueless about marketing. And I spent so much of my time and energy, Jeff, educating them about the benefits of marketing and how buying one ad in a magazine was not going to make or break their business. And it would be really heartbreaking to see brand new companies really spend $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 on a grand opening that nobody showed up to, and not knowing how to get the word out in effective and impactful ways. And so now I work with really creative entrepreneurs like me with too many ideas, and they don't know how to focus in on the ideas that'll make them money. I help them figure out how to use their creative gifts to make consistent income by staying focused on the right ones.
So you help entrepreneurs who have too many ideas, so I'm assuming that you've learned how to clone people. Because my problem is that I, very similar to the person that you probably just described, is I have 100 side ideas, and while my passion is my business, True Voice Media, you know, I have a bazillion other things on the side that I'm always working on. It's tough because it takes you in a lot of different directions. And I think I would agree with you that a lot of the small businesses I've spoken to really are clueless, but not by design. It's really just by you know, they're clueless, not because they want to be clueless, but because there's so much to do as a small business owner that if your natural inclination is not to be a marketer, it's very tough, especially now with how quickly things move. I mean, you've watched the transition going from in-print publishing to digital publishing and watched that whole thing happen and had the benefit of being married to a programmer too. So kind of having one foot in the pool. So I think that's one of the challenges. What are some of the things that you're working with small businesses on now as a starting point that helps them to get their feet into the digital pond and maybe break free from a lot of the status quo that they've been so comfortable with, but that might not be producing results?
So much of it is mindset, Jeff, and I loved what you said. So none of us, very few of us, got into business because we wanted to be marketers. People like you and me are totally geeky about marketing and could talk about it all day, right? I love marketing, but none of my clients are that way. They got into business because they have a passion to serve, to make a change in the world, to share their gifts and talents. And they're, you know, the classic Michael Gerber e-myth, they're technicians. They have skills and talents, but nobody taught them about marketing. Nobody taught them about money. Nobody taught them about basic business foundations. So the first place I start with business owners is helping them understand what it means to have the mindset of being a marketer, that everything you do has to be about getting the word out and increasing your visibility.
Yeah, absolutely. So where's the starting point? What's the first thing you cover with them? So walk us through an example. You know, small business owner, they're, you know, pick an industry, pick something that you're working on. What's one of the first kind of questions that you ask them? How do you start to pick their brain and figure out where are those gaps in their skill set and what they need? And it, you know, is it the, so for us, when we sit down with a client, the first thing we ask is, well, what are you trying to accomplish? Because we can't assume that all businesses, even the same size, are trying to accomplish the same things. So kind of what's your starting point? What's your process?
Sure. Like? Great question. So the first thing we start with is actually what are their financial goals, mm-hmm. and are they realistic, and really helping them go from work backwards, because I made the mistake of starting my business not knowing where I was going. And if I had worked backwards from, you know, well, how much money do I want to make? It would have helped a lot backing it up. I would have known all the steps I needed to take, as well as most of my clients tend to be in service-based businesses. They don't know how much they need to sell. They don't know how much to charge for their services or their products. And yet they have this mythic number, I want to be a millionaire, or I want to get to my first $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. Well, when you look at their selling maybe a $50 an hour coaching package, they would be coaching, you know, 500 hours a week in order to get there. So starting with the money goal is always the number one place that we start with.
That is, it's so funny that we're having this conversation specifically today, because my girlfriend and I just recently co-founded a business on the side. We're both doing it on the side. It's an online dating consultancy called Hitch Philly. And we were sitting down today and we were beginning to work out some of the packages and things like that. And we did exactly that. We looked at the financial endpoint of what do we want to make in this first year from this, and then backed that out in a monthly goal. And then we backed out that monthly goal into, okay, well, if we did that, how many packages do we need to sell at what different price points? And it really is a helpful exercise. I remember the first time I ever did that in the first year of my business, 2011, somebody sat me down. They said, well, okay, what does it cost for you to live? So we did it the other way. So we started taking all of my expenses and writing them down. Okay, and then all of your business expense, putting them all together. And we put all those together and came up with a monthly number that's necessary. And then we had to come up with, okay, well, how many hours a week are you working? And we did all of those sort of calculations. We came up with the retail rate, the wholesale rate, that, you know, the whole nine. Yeah. And it's kind of amazing how many business owners, and I'm sure you've had similar experiences, that I talked to in the beginning, very similar to what you just described, have no idea how to do those sort of calculations at all, which are, you know, pretty straightforward, and never think of it. They just say, I want to make $20,000 a month or something. And you go, okay, great. Let's talk about that. How do you do it?
Yeah. And it's crazy. You know, even a lot of, in the coaching industry, those numbers tend to get really inflated as well. And there are people charging anywhere from $50 an hour to $5,000 an hour or more, right, in the coaching industry. And so people can get that sort of pie in the sky, anything is possible. And I do believe that anything is possible, but you got to work your way, stair-step it up to that place. And I made that mistake. I had this big publishing company, was grossing hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, but didn't have a handle on my budget, wasn't getting paid. All that money was going to pay everybody else. And so I'm super passionate about this conversation. And I love what you said about it has to start with lifestyle. And people so often forget to include paying themselves. in their business plan, right? And it's a big part of, you know, why we got into business, to be able to pay ourselves. And I'm guilty of it. I'm just as guilty of it as so many other entrepreneurs. And in January of this year, my husband quit his job to come work full-time in my business. And so it's given us this renewed sense of focus on the numbers. And thank goodness, you know, he's got more of the that focused, structured mind than I do to pay attention to the details. But it changes the conversation completely about what you're spending money on, as well as what you're spending your time on. And it's so funny, I was reading, there's a great book called The Prosperous Coach, and he talked about how there's this mindset when people become entrepreneurs that they don't have to put in full time to build their business.
Oh, hilarious, says, right? Because, we only work 40 hours, right?
Yeah, only 40 hours, right? And well, and then you have people like Tim Ferriss talking about the 4-hour work week, but he worked hard to get to that 4-hour work week as well. A lot of systems and structures in place. But that sense of really we have to think of the work that we're doing just like any other white-collar person would think about their job. You go to the office at 8, you leave at 5, you get your tasks done during the day, you talk to people all day long. So many of my clients, and I don't know if you see this too, with the onset of digital media, it's created opportunities for people to hide out more and to have this sort of false belief that they can just sit at home behind their computer and build multi-million dollar businesses.
Yeah, I have seen some of that, but I like to think I'm a little bit of a I'm the ice bucket that dumps on that idea. And I actually take great delight in it because I'm very passionate about what I do. I'm very passionate about digital media and social media marketing and, you know, how it creates and facilitates connections and relationships, all these wonderful things. But I'm also the first person to tell someone when their pie in the sky is not reality. And I was actually going to ask you, how many times throughout your career in the way that you approach this, have you ever had to tell somebody, you know, this is just not simply viable? Or do you believe that anything's viable with enough tweaking of it?
I have definitely told people I didn't think their ideas were viable. I wouldn't say lots and lots of times. And rather than, I am a realist at heart, both a creative and a realist. I do believe anything is possible given enough time and effort. Right. So if somebody does really want to have that million-dollar business, get really crystal clear about how long it's going to take. You're not going to get there tomorrow or even in the first year. And do you want to work that hard? You know, it's a conversation my husband and I have all the time. We still have 2 teenagers at home. In 4 years, they'll both be gone. It's a different story about how much time we have to dedicate to what it is that we're building. And at a million-dollar business, it requires staff. It requires team. Is that what you want? Or do you want to have a location-independent business and a lifestyle where you're working from wherever in the world you want to be? Like, I would love to be blogging from Bali tomorrow, right? And the Bahamas the week after. So what's the, to me, again, is that question of the lifestyle that you want to create, making sure you're building a business model that supports your lifestyle, not the other way around.
Well, let me actually ask you about this because I'm curious your take since you're doing it. Couples married otherwise doing a business together, like, you know, I told you my girlfriend and I are co-founding a business on the side, and I've always had the belief that you don't hire friends or family, you don't, you know, lend money to friends or family, that sort of thing. And going into business together is a really big maneuver. As you know, owning a business is its own like having a child. So do you find that being able to work with your husband, that you have a little bit of a leg up because you know each other, you can kind of sense each other's moods and understand how to read each other better? Or do you think that it's a sort of thing that sometimes it's a little too close for comfort?
I think it's awesome. We've been married for 20 years this year, and it couldn't be more perfect for us. Do I think every couple has the opportunity to work together? Maybe not, but we've worked really hard at our relationship. And, you know, it's funny what you said about hiring family or hiring friends. It's very different, that sense of hiring, than it is of partnering with someone. We were out for our walk this morning, and I made some comment about, I have to do that, or I have to do this. And he's like, we have to do that. We have to do this. And so for me, it's a mindset shift in that all of a sudden there's 2 of us and not just me by myself. And so making sure that the conversations always stay open, it's a lot about conflict management and just being willing to have the hard conversations. Like, my husband loves me, doesn't like to say no to me. And the other day I'm like, hey, I want to invest this money in this advertising campaign. And he's like, I can't say no to you. And I said, well, yes, you can, you know, back it up and tell me why. So being willing to have hard conversations, I think, is the secret to success, as well as defining roles. So with you and your girlfriend and the online dating company, it's just who's doing what. I think in any company, when you're first starting, the biggest challenge is having clear definition of who's doing what and who's taking what responsibility, because that's when everything falls apart, if no one's really claiming their piece in the business. I work with this two women, they've been business partners for 25 years, and they do everything in tandem. There's no ownership of any piece of it, so it takes them twice as long to do everything, so there's no forward progress happening. So it can happen with business partners or married couples, just noticing what's the conversation that you're having. Are you willing to have it? And are you clear what the division of responsibilities are? Did that answer your question?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Well, listen, I want to pivot us and I want to get us onto some very specific stuff. So you have the credentials. You have, you know, done the multimedia publishing company, six figures. You know, you have been small business owner of the year. You've been on television, radio, all that sort of stuff. You've been kind of all over the place, and now you're working, coaching businesses and if I remember correctly, particularly women businesses, correct? And family businesses?
Yes.
Okay. So that's your target. Let's talk about some of the specific struggles and picking that niche of working with women and couples. You know, first, why did you choose that niche? You know, what are the specific struggles that they might face that others might not?
Awesome. Great question. So first of all, women who are most attracted to me, like everybody else, when I started my coaching practice, I'm like, oh, I can help anybody. And the more I narrowed the focus and paid close attention to who was showing up, it was primarily women who are attracted to the way that I work. Everything I do is with crayons and markers and big sheets of paper, super fun and creative. So noticing who's showing up is a big part of that. You know, we talked about the money piece, but the second problem that business owners struggle with is identifying who their perfect client is, yep. Right? It's a conversation we all end up having. If we're in any area of marketing, it's the number one piece that people have to figure out is the who you want to work with. So why women? It's because I am one. Why couples? I'm in that situation now. And when people struggle with identifying their ideal client, usually I say, just look in the mirror. In some way, they're going to be a reflection of who you are. Does it mean I don't work with men? So this is another marketing secret. I love working with men, but I market to women. You cannot market to both the same. They have different needs, different goals. They spend their time in different places on the internet, and they have different ways of having conversations. So the way that you would market my business to a man or a woman would be different. And you, when you're starting, you can't market to both. You got to pick. Right?
Yep.
You can't be everything for everybody.
Got it. So when you're starting out with these women or couple businesses and you look at, if you were to step back right now and think about all the clients you're working with and have worked with, if we get into the conversation about social media, content marketing, digital marketing, you know, landing pages, email marketing, all that sort of stuff, what is usually one of the first places that you tend to see a deficiency that you need to correct or that you can provide the most value off the bat?
Awesome. Great question. So I would say, again, it's the understanding who their ideal client is, because once they know who that ideal client is, they know where to spend their time online. So the second mistake they make is thinking that social media is going to be the magic bullet that if they build it, they'll come. And they're trying to be everywhere. So they're trying to be on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Pinterest. You know, they're trying to really spread their message across the board instead of being really targeted and focused and spending their time where their clients are spending their time. You know, if unless you're Gary Vaynerchuk, you're probably not hanging out a lot on Snapchat, right? You know, he loves Snapchat. But most of the women that I'm targeting have never even heard of Snapchat. It would be a waste of my time to spend energy there. I know that the women that I'm marketing are primarily on Pinterest, and they're on Facebook. So I'm spending most of my social media time marketing through Facebook and Pinterest. My husband is falling in love with Instagram, and so he's playing on Instagram. It's fun for him. So quit trying to be on every social media channel and pick the ones that are going to be create the opportunities for the most visibility in front of the people you want to reach.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great advice that you know, you only have so many hours in a day, so you have to focus on where it makes the most sense. I just had a client recently ask me about Snapchat, and I said, look, you know, we're taking on marketing automation. We're dealing in landing pages, SEO, paid search. You know, we're growing a Facebook audience, and we're using Twitter and Instagram and getting a lot of traction there. We just can't layer on Snapchat. And once we join that, that becomes a responsibility and something we have to do. So, you know, how do you go about determining, because realistically, your audience, my audience, all of our audiences are represented in some number across every platform. So I know that there are 68-year-old women who are using Snapchat. There's not a lot of them, but there's a couple that are there. So I could technically use Snapchat, but to a certain extent, it comes down to where's your audience and are they in the right volume and is it the right format? But also it comes down to you as a person. So I'll give you an example. Twitter is one of my absolute favorites that are out there. And it's difficult oftentimes for me to communicate to a client why they should use Twitter. Even if I show them the value, even if I walk them through the whole process, how do I get them to use it? So what are some of the things that you've been able to do when I guess having conversations with clients where you can get them to really see the value in something, even if it's not their natural state, because really that's part of the thing with social. Yeah. It's not natural to a lot of people and they have a lot of trouble with it. They say, what am I going to say, et cetera. What are some of the things that you found have been successful working with clients to get them out of their comfort zone and show them that there's a way to get results from this stuff?
So I would say approaching everything you're doing on social media from a perspective of being of service, and making sure that you're creating a content marketing calendar and that you know what it is that you're talking about. And when people say, I don't know what to talk about, I say, go ask your clients. The mistake that people make is they try to write about what's of interest to them instead of asking the important question, what do my prospective clients want to know from me? And so if you sit down, and I'm a big fan of mind mapping, and you put your ideal client in the center of that mind map and just start brainstorming. What are their biggest challenges, problems, and the solutions they're looking for? And every single piece of content that you put out through social media should solve a problem for someone, right? And if you're solving problems for them, they're going to be, wow, you get me. You can help me. And it just moves them closer to you. So it takes a lot of the mystery out of what to write about when you approach it from the perspective of, how can I be of service today?
Yeah, and just to add to that, one of the things that I do, I'm a big fan of mind mapping also. I mean, everywhere, and I love my whiteboard. I love my whiteboard. But one of the things I would suggest for people listening that may be getting started in how to whiteboard and how to mind map and how to do this sort of content strategy visually in this way is I would suggest limiting your number of nodes that are coming off of the primary. And I think the rule of three is good. I would say at maximum you go up to five, but think of your ideal client and say, what are the top three things that they need to know about, they're concerned about, their hopes, their fears, their dreams, whatever they might be. And then within that, then you can branch off three more within any of them. And then if you have to, you go one more level and branch off three within there. But at that point, you should have enough to actually begin building a basis of content, a foundation of content. But I think your point is well articulated, that it really does start not with what you're interested in, but with what they're interested in. The only caveat I would add to that is that if part of what they're interested in is your perspective on something, if you become, you know, one of the reasons I think people follow, you mentioned Gary Vaynerchuk, one of the reasons why I think people follow him is because it's not just what he's talking about, but it's how he talks about it. And the method in which he says it. And, you know, that's part of this whole idea of thought leadership is oftentimes what I think people miss is that it's not just that there's a topic, because there's, you know, if it's about topics, then the game's already over because the internet has everything on it. If there's a perspective, there's a topic, somebody's written about it or talked about it. But it's about the way that you are able to articulate that, or the way you're able to look at it and say it. And I think that provides us with the opportunity for infinite numbers of permutations about perspectives on topics.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I was having a conversation with a new client yesterday who's starting a business coaching business. And she's like, how do I differentiate myself? And it's exactly what you were saying. It's that authenticity piece, the originality piece. She happens to be an ordained minister, works at a church. It's an evangelical church, but non-denominational. But the faith is the piece that's really important to her. And I'm like, if you put that out there, then the right people are going to be attracted. So it's about, I think, bringing all of ourselves to the content. So it's about offering solutions, but doing it in a way that's unique to you. For me, that's creativity, mind mapping, crayons and markers. Other people aren't doing business planning with crayons and markers. And so it is that originality piece and not being afraid. Also, I would say to make a stand for what you know to be right. And because I think people are looking for thought leaders and they are looking for people to take a stand and say, try it this way. And this is what's worked for me. So I totally agree with where you're going with that.
Yeah. Well, let's dig in a little bit on the authenticity thing, because one of the things that is floating around right now, I mean, since the beginning of social, we've been talking about transparency, openness, authenticity, and all the other buzzwords, you know, not that they're not relevant, but that they're overused and talked about a lot. But authenticity has come back up recently as we see this push towards live streaming and Snapchat and this unedited, unfiltered kind of look at people and access to parts of their lives where we might not have otherwise seen, which, you know, a lot of it turns out being extremely mundane and boring, but the same was said about Twitter when it first came out. What's your take with your clients on things like Periscope and Facebook Live and Snapchat? Is that something you've been able to incorporate, or are you kind of sticking with tried and true? Because that's really what most businesses need, is to do the last thing rather than the next great thing.
So I encourage them to pick the ones where they're comfortable. And so if that's pre-recorded video, then do pre-recorded video, but do video. Don't care where you're doing it, but do it. I love Zoom. It's one of my favorite new technologies. So I use Zoom a lot. Periscope's okay. I love the live streaming concept, though. So I've moved all of my webinars, actually, and all my training with my clients to the Zoom format. I love that we're face-to-face, even though people listening aren't necessarily seeing that. You and I are having that human connection. I do think the value of Periscope Lab and other platforms, Facebook Live now, is because people are missing the human interaction. And you can talk all day about authenticity, but you can't show up on Periscope without being totally who you are and it being really noticeable. So it's less about maybe authenticity than it is about originality, right? Not being afraid to make a stand for who you are and how you see things uniquely. That's what I love about live streaming, is that people just get you in the moment, who you are, you can't hide. And it's that realness that people want. You know, back to Gary Vee again, I think that was what people were so attracted to in the beginning, was because he wasn't trying to be anybody else. And I've seen a big transformation in speaking in a lot of motivational and inspirational speakers, from that more authoritarian, do this, do that, to here's my story, Brené Brown, Elizabeth Gilbert, you know, showing up and saying, you know, I'm not getting it right. Anne Lamott, one of my favorite writers, is just the humility that people are bringing to the table and saying, hey, I've made all these mistakes. I've moved through them to the other side. And I'm going to be here with you while you make those mistakes, because you're going to make them. And so I think that human connection allows us to share from a place that is about originality more than authenticity, about transparency, about vulnerability, and about integration, like bringing all of our gifts to the forefront. We have diverse backgrounds. And so not saying I'm only doing this now, but saying because I've done all of these other things, it's gotten me to this place, and learn from where I've been and take everything that you're doing and bring it forward. So for me, again, it's that I tell my clients all the time, stop hiding and just get out there and show up. And so I love that you can show up on Periscope or Facebook Live from the comfort of your own home or the beach in the Bahamas. So just show up. Visibility is, to me, the key to marketing success today.
So I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and but there is one area where I kind of want to poke at it and push back a little bit and explore it a bit, which is that, you know, a lot of my clients tend to be in highly regulated spaces, healthcare, pharma, law, insurance, things like that. And there are certain dangers and certain liabilities that come along with being in these regulated industries, things you can't say and things that you can't take back in a live streaming space. But if we look at where the industry is going, it's really pushing, and it's really whether or not it's what people want. I'm still not convinced that people actually want to watch live video, at least not live. I think time shifted there. I think it's, again, it's the authenticity, originality, and my buddy Josh just wrote a post about this. But that it's really more about that originality and authenticity that we just spoke about, and not so much that it's live right now, I'm watching at this moment. But my point being is that while that's being pushed, that Facebook's giving greater distribution for that, and everyone wants to talk about Periscope, and Snapchat is the social media darling right now, it still leaves a lot of these industries that already have a very difficult time keeping up even further behind, because now that the deck is kind of slanted more towards these technologies they can't even use. So what are your thoughts on that? And is it that either we're going to have to start bringing these industries along more quickly, or that they're just going to get left further and further behind?
Well, I don't see lawyers and health insurance going away anytime soon, or medical or HIPAA laws or any of that, right? I mean, they're core industries that keep our company running in so many ways. So I don't see the industries coming along as fast as maybe some of the rest of us would like them to. But how can they engage in a way that supports their clientele? There are so many questions that people have, and video is a great way to answer questions. You know, it's like, how many times have you gotten on the phone for a service call for a doctor's office and you're on the phone forever? Well, what if there was a FAQ or something on there that would give you information? There's ways to use current technology that I say positions them as experts. It's less for me on in that case, in those industries, about authenticity and originality as it is about service. And stop burying ourselves under the bureaucracy of phone calls and, you know, old-fashioned music on the voice recorder.
You don't like old-fashioned music?
No, I like smooth jazz, Jeff. I like smooth jazz.
Smooth jazz.
So it's just about, I say, showing up in a way that shows. So it's the human connection, I think, that people want. And what those industries haven't figured out is how to do that in a way that doesn't violate the rules that are in place, but still allows them to show up and say, we get you, we hear you, we see you, we're listening. I think what people want is to feel listened to more than anything.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's funny because, you know, I asked you that question kind of as a loaded question a little bit, because what I've tended to do in the situations of the highly regulated industries is said, hey, there's a sandbox that we can play in, and then there's outside the sandbox, which is hot lava. If you remember ever being a kid with the sandbox and hot lava. I always looked at a sandbox and hot lava. So when I'm working with clients that are in healthcare or pharma or law or, you know, any of these areas where stepping in the hot lava could be potentially very, very, very expensive or a lot of reputation damage or whatever, is to say, well, let's just play in the sandbox. There's in none of these is there a rule or a regulation against having a real conversation with a human being. And just, you have this list of things you can't play in. They're the hot lava. So instead, you talk to them as a human being, you address their concerns, you talk to them, and you listen to what they're going through. And when you reach a topic where you can't talk about it, you say, listen, I'm actually not allowed to talk to you about that. I'm not allowed to give you advice because I wouldn't want to steer you in a direction. You know, I wouldn't want to make any guarantees that I couldn't back up. What I would like to do is, at this point, it would make more sense for us to take it offline, sit down, have a conversation, talk about your individual goals so that nobody else gets the idea as we're having this conversation that, you know, this is going to be applicable for everyone. But I did want to make sure that people could hear the variety of concepts we're going to talk about today, et cetera, et cetera. So and it's funny because I've sat down with people that are financial advisors that work in insurance. And when I explain that kind of a concept to them, it's like I hit them in the face with a brick. They're like, I never thought you could do that because it's so outside of the norm, which is strange because I don't know of a single business that's run by anything other than a human being.
Right.
And all that's really advocating, what we've been talking about, is that idea of being a human being, of being authentic and connected and having that human contact. So it's amazing that that's so difficult. But let me ask you about one more question, and because I know we got to wrap up soon. I know we both have to kind of go our separate ways, but I've really enjoyed this conversation. We should definitely do it again. But here's my question for you, and this is about the other side of it. So there's pulling your clients along that aren't willing to do the things you're asking them to do because it's outside of their comfort zone or whatever it is. But what about the other side? What about those clients that are so gung-ho that you've got, you know, I don't know, you've got a florist and they're like, should we be on Tinder? And you're like, I don't really... you're not even doing Facebook well yet. So, you know, how much have you had to encounter the clients that are constantly calling you with the new idea, the new thing, and tempering that enthusiasm?
Those are my clients.
Ah, those are all of them. Every one of them.
Every day, every time I get on the phone, it's a new business idea or new, you know, whatever.
Makes sense.
So new project, new concept, new twist in their business. Pulling them back to center. You know, will this move you closer towards your goals or further away from it? Will it connect you with our ideal clients or not? So again, it comes back to the question of what's your financial goal and is this going to help you get there? And who's your ideal client and is this going to get you in front of them? And as long as you can keep them focused, which with creatives is really challenging, keep them focused on that end goal. And from my perspective, keep them connected to the big why. Like, you know, if your clients aren't on Snapchat, then why would you spend your time there, right? It's a waste of your time. So just really helping them understand what's going to keep them on track and on target and moving towards what they've said they really wanted, because that's how they're going to see the results and the measurements. And I also am a big fan of making sure you perfected one before you add another. And the number one thing I teach is pick one social media channel and get it going before you add a second one. You don't need to be on all of them at once. So I love that you said that. It's master Facebook, which, you know, could take years to master Facebook and it changes all the time, or master Twitter and then move on. You don't have to be on all of them to be successful.
Excellent. Kick-ass advice. Everyone listening, write that down, rewind, rewrite it down, double underline it, and write it in Sharpie. So before we go, though, I want to make sure that you know, you set aside time to come on and talk with me on my show, which I really appreciate. I want to make sure that's valuable for you and also for the people listening. If there's a way that we can make this connection, let's make this happen. So I'm going to ask you a question, and then we're gonna make a quick little ninja move here. So in a sentence, of the people listening, how would they know if they're your ideal client? Who would they be, where they sound like, where they look like?
So they would self-identify as a creative entrepreneur with bright, shiny idea syndrome that can't focus in on one idea long enough to make a consistent income at it.
Specific age, gender. It's women mostly.
Yes, women, usually in their 40s. So I would say it's a woman. She's 40, probably married, probably has kids. And she has a home-based business. And she's probably been doing it for a few years. And she can't figure out how to get from where she is to the next level.
This is hilarious. I think we have the same target audience, at least in my my consulting. So I have, you know, clients that I deal with on a big strategy and an implementation. Sure. Then we have regular, you know, consulting clients. I think we have the exact same audience. But beyond that, so
does she have a name? So.
I'm not going to reveal it online, but yeah, actually I have a persona that I hang in my office. So for those that are listening, if you're a 40 something year old entrepreneurial woman, you've got a home-based business, you've got a bazillion ideas, you can't focus, which sounds actually like my number one fan, Wanda. Beyond that, if you are that and you are listening, I want you to listen, because Minette is going to tell you about the Path to Profit Summit and how you can learn more about it and how it might be a good option for you. Not to say that, you know, this is my, you know, my podcast is not a pitch for anybody or anything, but, you know, Minette does this and I want to make sure that there's an opportunity that if this is the right fit for you, you've been looking for something like this, you know, that Minette's out there and this exists. So Minette, can you tell me a little bit about the Path to Profit Summit?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So it's a 3-day live event hosted in LA, usually somewhere near the airport. We do 3 or 4 of them a year. We have one coming up in mid-July, July 15th to 17th. And you'll spend 3 days with the buckets of crayons and markers and big sheets of paper designing your one-page business plan. Creatives really struggle with planning because it's hard to go from all those ideas to structure. So we spend 3 days helping you get all those beautiful ideas into a system that you can turn into money. So if you're feeling really stuck, really overwhelmed, we invite you to come and play with us. And Jeff, it's basically free to attend. They pay $97 to reserve their seat, and we actually give them their $97 back when they show up. So we want you to come and play with us. We'll talk about marketing. You'll walk away with your 30-day marketing plan in place as well. So people say that they walk away not feeling overwhelmed, but feeling crystal clear about exactly what they need to do next to build that profitable business.
Awesome. Come play with us. Yeah. I think that's a good note to end on. I'm probably going to even name the episode, Come Play With Us.
Nice.
So, Minette, thank you so much for coming on to the show. Before we leave, the final thing I'd like you to do is please tell people where they can go to be social with you and learn more about what it is that you do.
So I'm a total Facebook junkie. They can find me at Coach Minette on Facebook. And they can online follow us at PathToProfitAcademy.com. We're Path to Profit Academy on Twitter as of today as well. So we're in a bit of rebranding, but everything, they get all our contact information, everything is at PathToProfitAcademy.com.
Awesome. And we will put that all in the show notes. And you'll send me anything else that we want to put in there, anything of value. Anything like that. Again, Minette, thank you so much for coming on the show. You have been awesome. And for those of you that haven't been able to see Minette's face on video, which I don't think any of you have unless you've been following along on Join Me, which I haven't checked, but they are fantastic frames. So you keep on going on with your bad self and doing what you do. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me today. Super fun. Appreciate it. And love what you're doing with social media.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I like what I'm doing with social media too most of the time. Yeah, so for all of you out there that use, that is a total Philly thing. That's crazy. I just did that. Anyway, for all of you out there that listen to the show and love us, thank you so much for listening and your time and attention. Go give us a rating. Tell us that we're awesome or that you hated it and tell us why so I can learn. Have a great rest of the day. Take care. You've been listening to the True Voice Media Podcast and you made it all the way to the end of the episode. I'm proud of you. But now that you're here, this is what we're going to need you to do. First of all, head on over to your favorite podcast platform and give us a rating. If you don't know where to start, go to truevoicemedia.com/feedback. Next, if you're not yet a subscriber, it's time you fix that. Head over to truevoicemedia.com/podcast to subscribe by iTunes, Stitcher, or email. If you really want to show us some love, visit our partners and sponsors who help make this show possible. I know the show feels free, but trust me, it's not. I sure ain't done publishing these episodes, so I sure hope you're not done listening. I'll see you on the next one. Take care.